various artists.
So you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
Kat Fuchs is a Tamaki-based material-led painter who immerses herself within the world of her studio, in which Kat no longer views it as just a physical space, but rather its own dimension built up of paint and clutter that is crucial to the making of the works. Her current exhibition, Didymus Mountain, presents a series of vibrant and playful paintings, little worlds of abstract colour and texture that seem to rebel against the typical convention of the frame, engulfing the frame itself in a multitude of rich layers of paint, rejecting this framing and instead bringing it into the world of the painting itself, eliminating the space between the painting and the space of the world. I had a chat with Kat about her overall practice and the show. Do you start off by introducing yourself and your overall practice, the key mediums that you gravitate towards, as well as the thematic and or material glue of your practice, the thing that kind of acts as a undercurrent between all projects?
Yeah, hi, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here. I am a painter and I've been working on my craft for a number of years now. And I'd say that what I'm really focused on is the material of paint and kind of permeates everything that I do, drives my studio practice, really.
And your current show is called Didymus Mountain, which showcases a series of wonderfully playful, both vibrant and textual paintings that takes its title from the pseudonym of Thomas Hill, who was a Elizabethan astrologer, cosmologist, and author of the 1577 guide, The Gardener's Labyrinth. Could you speak a bit to its influence on this body of work, as well as the idea as gardening as this analogy for painting?
Yeah, so I mean, with every show comes the pressure to come up with a great title, and also with titling the works as well. Mm. And so usually nearing the end of my run in the studio of making the works, I start to sort of focus on thinking about, you know, ideas and influences and yeah, just thinking around the works and what they're making me trigger and think about. And I was really thinking about medieval gardens and garden design, and I was looking actually for women garden designers who worked and were influential back in that medieval time, and there actually weren't that many women garden designers at that time, not surprisingly. But I did discover Didymus Mountain, and I just thought, when I read about Thomas Hill, he was like such a Renaissance man, and first of all, the name made me laugh out loud, and I was like, this is crazy. And then I thought, I quite like the pun that his name's Hill, but he chose mountain. And then Didymus, it actually is Greek, and it means pairing, so it means two.
Oh, okay.
And I quite like that idea, because I have actually made sort of subconsciously sets of works in the studio, so there's sort of two or three that pop out of the same ilk, and not all of them make it into the show. Some of them are on the cutting room floor, but they sort of are in clumps, you know. And so I just thought, this is a great name. No one's going to know what it means. And
I've ever heard of it.
Yeah. And so it was esoteric enough for me to run with that. So it was the first illustrated garden book. The gardening metaphor is really interesting. And Anna's written a great text that's on the poster that is kind of encapsulates these ideas. But I do have a garden, and I'm really interested in gardens and gardening, and I really I find that it's the backdrop of it, really it feeds into the painting practice, and it's imbued in my work. The paintings are not about gardens or flowers or anything botanical as such, but the feelings and the beauty and just the overall sense of nature, I think, is in the work in some form. And also, I like the metaphor of just that idea of toiling away and having to plant seeds and then wait for them to grow. And like that is all really about having a studio practice as well. It's just like you're in that constant sense of graft and toil and work.
Yeah, it's funny, my I'm a painter and my mum is a gardener, and she always tells me that her painting is her garden, and like she kind of like references it in these like little, yeah, like the way that she takes care of it and nurtures it and plants and yeah.
Yeah, and I share my garden with my mum and my brother and sister and my dog Minty, and so it's a family affair. And the thing is that my brother always says, you know, you garden like you work in the studio, so your process is exactly the same, and it's kind of a nightmare. Like you want to paint, you want to sort of like I want to paint over everything, and you want to plant over everything and crowd out the plants, and you want riotous colours that don't seemingly won't go together, but then they somehow they totally work together.
Yes, and you've mentioned before that your studio space that you've occupied for nearly 15 years acts more than just a physical space, but rather that it has become more like its own world, dictated by your own personality, in which the clutter and the dirty floor are part of and critical to the working process itself. Could you speak a bit more to the world of your studio and what your creative process looks like?
Yeah, well, I was sort of thinking about this morning, and I was thinking that the studio is kind of my bubble. So, yeah, the studio is really, really important to me because it's total freedom. Yeah, the routine of that is really important. So knowing that you don't have to pack up and go and put it in all in a suitcase and go somewhere with it is, painting is really hard. And it's really hard to paint sometimes. And so you have to get there and then open that door, take a deep breath and just start and think, have some faith that something's going to happen. And you know this because you're a painter and you just graduated from Elam. But
yes.
I've got this show and tell story happening because I really wanted to read out some quotes that I thought were just amazing and have really, really sum up my practice and what I think about what it is to be a painter. But so the book is called Martin Gayford, How Painting Happens, brackets, and Why It Matters. And it's Thames and Hudson, and it came out last year. And he is an art writer and has written many books on Hockney and Lucian Freud, Auerbach, a lot of different painters in from the 60s onwards, and found some really good quotes, and I'm just going to dive in here and have a look.
Wonderful.
He once met Peter Doig, who's a painter, and he wanted to talk to him about how he knows when a painting's finished, because that's one of the chapters.
Yes.
And he says here, Peter Doig says, I guess I feel a painting is finished when it stops bugging me, when I stop thinking about it, or start thinking about it in a different way, start just looking at it. I got to that stage last night at about 4 o'clock in the morning. It had taken quite a long time, but it's not a problem anymore. It doesn't make me want to vomit. And I just really like that visceral response to painting, because it's such a struggle, and it is actually a bit like that when you know, you're so invested emotionally into what you're doing that it does have a visceral reaction when you do feel a sense of euphoric.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I've nailed this painting. It's so amazing. And then and then that classic familiar feeling of you leave and then you come back the next morning and you're like, oh, da-dole. Yeah. And then because you often, I find the closer I get to a show as well that I get really, it gets harder and harder for me to perceive and discern if anything's good. So I will get some trusted people to come in and be like, I just don't know anymore if are these any good. Should I keep working on them or not? And then it's like, no, tools down. Or like, put that. So I've started a system now where I do have a shelf and I will put works on it that are like, that's a pass. And then I can put it out of the way and carry on without tinkering on it. But
because
I was just going to say, back to my show, people can go and see it and have a look at it, but the paintings are all really overpainted, and there's a lot of layering that's happened. So it's like many paintings that have been edited out on top of each other that's resulted in the final painting.
Yeah.
And then embedded in the painting are things that I've wanted to used to build up the surface or build up the frame. Frank Auerbach, who's a painter, he was the kitchen sink painter in the 1950s and onwards in the UK, around the time of Lucian Freud and Leon Kozlov and things. But he uses a lot of paint, and it's oil paint. But the difference with Auerbach is that he scrapes it off. So he obsessively works up his surfaces, but he'll remove it and then start again and remove it until he's satisfied. Mm. But he said here, occasionally I feel I've grown too adept at what I'm doing. It seems to me that one of the differences between interesting and uninteresting painters is that interesting painters start anew every time they paint a picture, and I try and do that. Then I try to find something that I've absolutely no idea how to cope with. And I kind of, I really, that idea resonates with me because it is a matter of, it's that fine balance of like, okay, you've been doing this for 20 years, you know what you're doing, and you know how what materials and what paint's going to do. Mm. But you've also, you've got to have that sense in the studio where you're like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Yeah. And you've got to be right on the edge of that feeling of like, the abyss of not knowing.
Yeah, it's like the element of discovery and just like being, letting yourself be in that space where you don't know. Like you don't know what it's going to be, and that's really exciting but terrifying. But you just, but, I mean, that's where it comes out of those little
pockets. Yeah, it's, I was going to say exactly the same thing, that it's exciting but it's also terrifying.
Yeah.
And so he also says here, I could read you the whole book, but we don't have time, but he says here, carrying on and hoping for a miracle is Auerbach's method, just as scraping down and starting afresh day after day was Leon Kozlov's, as we will see. And even when a painter of this kind succeeds, they do not necessarily know how they did it.
Yes.
When I spoke to Cecily Brown, who's another female painter who uses a lot of paint, she had recently finished a work that she was really pleased with, but she went on to say, I absolutely no idea how I did it. The way I was putting the paint on was brand new, and I can't really recreate that, nor would I want to. Often you don't know how you did something. And, yeah, I mean, I really, again, the dichotomy of knowing your craft and being able to be really proficient with it, but then also leaving room for chance and serendipity in the studio and being like, I don't know how I did that. Oh, my God, that is such a happy accident or mistake.
Those are like the best works, the ones that you just, like, you don't know how you made it. And it's like, you know, you did it, but it's like, you kind of got lost in it that it's kind of like.
There's a disassociation.
Yeah.
I think, what I would say about, I mean, this is the thing about having a show that's so amazing and such a privilege, is that you get to pop up once a year and you get to see your works in this amazing jewel box of a gallery with these gorgeous walls that Anna's painted all the different colours, and it's just looking so fine. And it's the reward for that is, you know, all that graft and toil and time to get to that point. And also there's all the failed paintings that trail along behind you, and there's all the sort of detritus and tears and other things, but the end result is a really cohesive show that hangs together and is otherworldly. It's like you don't know how you got there, and you don't know, you just can't even imagine that you did it. You're not recognizing it as your own as your own labor of love, but it is.
Your work almost rebels against this typical idea of the frame being this border in which a painting itself is kept within, acting as this border between the world of the painting and the space of the world. But within your works, you completely eliminate this border and bring the frame into a place of the painting itself. What led you to this treatment of the frame, and what does this lack of separation between the painting and the world bring to the work itself and the experience of the work?
Originally, it was kind of a practical decision. I'm quite a resourceful person, being a Capricorn. And so I sort of started off with, you know, finding a lot of substrates and using found board and paintings from op shops and things that already had frames existing on them. other people's canvases that they were like, I'm moving out. Do you want to have a whole lot of my stretchers that I don't need anymore?
Okay.
And I was there with my car to like load it up. So I got pretty flexible at experimenting with different surfaces and board and canvas and fronts and backs and sides. And as I got further down the tunnel of it, I realized that I am really interested in the framing device of a painting and the form inside and the relationship between the two. And I'm really interested in edges. So for me, the edges of the paintings are just as much fascinating as the edges of where the frame hits the interior of a painting.
Yeah, that's my favourite.
And how all the tension arises between those formal elements. And so, but also the other thing was that all artists struggle, I think, in their own way with what to paint. You know, you have to come to it in your own time and realisation of what it is that you want to actually do. And what the epiphany really was that I realised I'm a process-based artist. So the abstract work or the result comes out of the process of the doing. So I make things that come out of the craft of applying the paint, so one thing leads to another, and it will inform me as to what that picture is going to end up looking like. So I've sort of gotten less and less interested in the idea of painting a form or the actual content in the middle of a picture, and I'm like more interested in making a painterly object that it still is a reference as a painting, it still has a frame, but it's actually about the making of that painting that interests me, and then how it comes out and comes out into the world. But I think I liked what you said about that refusal, or that sort of, what did you, the word that you used?
Rebelling. A rebelling.
Yeah, I liked, because I think that there is something in me that does want to rebel against that kind of really lovely bourgeois idea of that gorgeous big luscious painting on Belgian linen, with the gorgeous like Remu handcrafted frame around it, and it just looks really expensive and it smells expensive and it's like you can totally identify it. It's got all the signifiers of being a painting.
Yeah.
And I think I am interested in subverting that idea and getting away from that. I'm not wanting to make paintings like that, so that's good, because I won't and I never will, and and that's easy.
I kind of see these the paintings of this wall as kind of expansion of the painting themselves. Within your show, each wall that the paintings are being shown on is painting a different colour, mimicking the colours from within the paintings, and further leaning into this rejection of the neutral space between, as the typical white gallery wall normally acts as a kind of extension of the typical frame. Could you talk a bit about this decision and how it plays into the ideas of the work?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that Anna had been travelling earlier this year to the Munich Jewellery Festival, and she took the opportunity to go and see a lot of amazing galleries in Europe that had painted their walls in quite dark, deep, rich colours. And she actually did send me an image saying, you know, inspiration for your show. And initially I was sort of like, wow, this is a pretty rich forest green, but can my paintings handle it? And what's the outcome of that? But then once we actually were in the space and we were installing the show and hanging them up, it became apparent that they not only could totally handle that colour, but they actually really popped on that wall. And this is a terrible term, it sounds like we're in one of those renovation home shows, but I think's really great about the show and the colours, so there's, to offset the green is a beautiful buttery yellow in one wall, and it's is an interesting choice. Anna put the Gondwana Land painting, which is a sort of a primarily yellow on a yellow wall, which was quite a bold idea. And it didn't get eaten up by the yellow wall. But I think what's really great about the show is that it's a domestic scale of painting that I'm doing, and perhaps the wall colours are, you know, it's slightly more of a feeling like you're in a home with someone who's perhaps done, dare we say it, a feature wall. yeah. And it's not too far removed from how you could visualise living with that, with those works.
Mm.
And that's actually really great, because my paintings, they are sort of smaller scale, and they do live with me in my house, and I do live with them, and I change them out. And yeah, it's that daily outing of just quietly, it's just there as you make your morning coffee and you you know, choosing what you're going to watch on Netflix. It's just there, hanging there, but it's really, it's still making a real point of being there on the wall. And I think that the exhibition really is about that. It's about you know, living with art is a long way away from the cold, austere, white, galleried, cubed space that perhaps we, you know, were really aware of in the 90s, that was the model that most galleries had. And I think times are changing, and people are looking at art in a different way and displaying it in a different context.
Yeah. No, I love that it brings it into the space of kind of the domestic.
Yeah, I just really want people to be able to feel that they can access it, and not, it's not elitist, and it's not so intimidating as being a gallery space that they can't go into, or they can't look at something, you know?
Yeah. Which also plays in lovely vein, Anna Miles Gallery is at Anna Miles' house.
Yeah, exactly. It's in her home and she lives there, and yeah, it's just lovely.
That was Kat Fuchs speaking to me about her current show, Didymus Mountain, which is on at Anna Miles Gallery until the 16th of August.